Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. On this episode, I'm using the power of the interwebs to talk to a guy by the name of Grant Tondro in California. Grant is the co-founder of the Three Local Brothers Restaurant Group, who operate a whole bunch of food and bev outlets through Southern California. One such operation is Mason Aleworks, a 15-barrel or 18-hectolitre operation just north of San Diego, a craft beer hotspot in the USA. The brewery is set inside an airplane hangar-like building that is home to a huge restaurant, a humongous bar, and an 8-lane bowling alley with its own separate bar. Sounds pretty cool, I reckon. So, to discuss this some more, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Grant Tondro.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Mate, it's an absolute pleasure. Now, before we get into it, I want to tell the listeners about your team page on your website because I love it. And for those who haven't seen it, each of the team listed on the page share their two truths and a lie. Now, we like to do this same thing at the company that I work for, and it's as simple as it sounds. You've basically listed two truths about yourself, one lie about yourself, and your co-workers have to guess. So for Grant, he listed the following. He was briefly in a ska band that opened for Weezer. He's a certified kitchen and bath designer. And after losing a bet, he had to tattoo a unicorn with a lightsaber for a horn on his lower back. Now, mate, I really don't know you from a bar of soap, but I'm going to guess that you didn't open for Weezer. And my reasoning for this is that I think it would take longer than just a brief stint in a band to be good enough to be able to open up for Weezer. So, I can't pick it. Maybe your truth is that you're a certified kitchen and bath designer.
So the truth is I opened up for Weezer and I'm a certified kitchen and bath designer, but no tramp stamp on me.
That's magnificent. How did you open up for Weezer? What was your band called?
So the band I was briefly in was called The Secretaries, based out of Columbia, Missouri. I was going to university out there. It was the late 1990s. And Weezer, while they were popular, were not the same size band that they are now. And Columbia is a relatively small college town, but is in between two much bigger cities, Kansas City and St. Louis. So if guys were doing a tour through that portion of the United States, a lot of times they'd try to cram in one extra date. And so Columbia ended up being where they would do that at. So we actually got some pretty cool guys through there, especially some up-and-coming guys. So this was late 1996, early 1997. I still have the ticket stub that my girlfriend at the time had snagged for me when she came to see the show.
Oh, mate, that is magnificent. As someone who was coming of age in the mid-90s, I'm in my 40s now, so that was really my time to enjoy, you know, the music from those days, and Weezer was certainly one of those bands. Fantastic stuff.
Thank you. I can definitely relate. I'm 41 myself, so it was definitely my wheelhouse.
Well, as I'm the older gentleman on the microphone, I'll take the lead today, if that's all right.
Cheers.
Now, look, as I said in the opener, there is a bunch of elements that make up the Three Local Brothers, or the 3LB group. Do you want to give us a bit of an overview of this whole 3LB business you're in?
Certainly. The story really goes back to being 15 years old, and to get a driver's license in California, you have to be 16. But when you're 15, you can start doing the classroom education to get your permit to then learn how to actually drive on the road. And I just recently moved to San Diego. I grew up in the Los Angeles area. And my best friend, Zach Higson, had just recently moved from Buffalo, New York, though he's from Toronto originally. And we ended up sitting next to each other in this class when we were 15. The rest is kind of history. He became an accountant. I became a banker. We did other things along the way, like kitchen and bath designing. I'm a certified sommelier as well. But we always wanted to start our own business. And one day the stars aligned, and in our mid-20s, we got the first restaurant open, which is actually a wine bar and bistro. And over the course of the last 13 years, a total of 7 restaurants in the brewery, it's been quite a ride. I spend most of my time now focusing on the brewery. I'm actually... as we're recording this, I'm in a parking lot in Las Vegas, Nevada. I just drove into town We have a beer festival we're pouring out this weekend, and I'm supposed to be heading into an account as soon as we're done here to say boo to some Mason Ale Works fans. So it's a good time.
Vegas, baby. You got to love Vegas, and I'm hoping that what happens in Vegas will stay in Vegas for you.
You better believe it. I'm married with 3 kids, so I'm not nearly as excited as I used to be.
Let's be honest. You're probably too old for that shit.
You got that right.
Although, having said that, on my last trip to Vegas, I can't remember part of one of the nights, but anyway, that's a story for another time.
One can only aspire to have that kind of night.
let's talk about the production brewery in San Marcos, if I've pronounced that right. I've heard the property is described as Disneyland for brewers. What is it like?
So it was a 21,000 square foot building that was part of an industrial park, and we're just coming into our own as a restaurant group. We'd open up our fourth establishment, and we're doing quite well, and we were approached by a property developer who was putting up apartment buildings, and he was having a hard time filling the apartment buildings because he didn't really have the right set of amenities. There was no attractions. They were just really nice, expensive apartments where there wasn't anything for people to do. So we found a way where we could help each other out and create a hotspot that would help him fill apartments and for us sort of bring a dream to life that Zach and I had been kicking around for a few years. So we have 8 bowling lanes. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Big Lebowski.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what kind of following it's got down in Australia, but it's definitely a go-to for mine.
Yeah.
And that was definitely a lot of fun to put in. The restaurant has about 400 seats. We did all the interior design ourselves. 4 fire pits out on the front, a small concert stage, bocce ball courts, cornhole, quite a few other sort of fun things to do. And it really is a bit of paradise. We very rarely have trouble getting other brewers to agree to doing collaborations with us because, you know, a lot of brewers will joke that being a brewer is being a glorified janitor. And so once we get things started, then, you know, next thing we know, we're off having a few White Russians and bowling a few lanes or waiting for the boil or waiting for a transfer in the mash kettle. And we'll be out playing cornhole or bocce and then got some good food to it. I've always been a big believer that real men have curves. So, you know, I'm definitely no pig. And the beer and burgers certainly helped back that up.
Nice. And then what have you got? You've got in Carmel Valley, which I think slightly west of there. Is that a tasting room or is that a test brew facility?
Yeah, that's a tasting room. We've got 20 beers on tap and then all of our beers available for retail purchase.
Oh, so no actual brew kit in that one?
Correct. We had a small brewery in our Oceanside location where things started, but the San Marcos facility is so much bigger that, you know, for better or worse, as a businessman, you start to learn the economics of some of this stuff. It's very expensive for us to brew in Oceanside in terms of a labor standpoint. We can brew so much more beer in the same amount of time on our setup in San Marcos. So we end up brewing there most of the time now.
How long did you have the Oceanside property for?
So about 4 years.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's really where things started for us. My dream was to always own my own winery, but I'm about $50 million short of ever owning a small failing winery. So getting a brewery started seemed much more feasible.
Yeah, fair enough. So, look, being that your business interests are in San Diego County, I've been to San Diego. I love the place. That is like a bit of a craft beer mecca with, I think, 150, 160 breweries or something like that. I'm just wondering whether it was a bit of a risk starting like another brew house, or were you confident that in combination with your other food and beverage outlets, you could move enough beer to make it viable?
It was definitely a bit of a risk, and you point out something good. Our second restaurant that we opened was our first beer bar. We opened that up in July of 2010, and it had 51 beers on tap, which was, you know, nearly unheard of in San Diego County at the time. But I recall when we opened, the 34th brewery in San Diego had just opened up.
Oh, wow.
And here we are 10 years later, and there's about 150 to 160. So we just experienced this gigantic boom. So at the time we decided to open up our own brewery, there were still only about 50 breweries in town. And then by the time we opened it, believe it or not, I think we were the 111th brewery to open when we started brewing in 2015.
Jeez.
We had nearly 80 breweries in a 5-year span that opened up, and then another 50 breweries that have opened up since then, approximately.
Wow. The San Diego craft beer scene must just be absolutely pumping these days, but almost to the point where you don't know everybody anymore.
Yeah, you know, my oldest daughter is 10 years old and nearly 11 now, and So on my days off from the restaurant, when we got that open, I used to take her while my wife was at work, and she'd be asleep in her little baby carrier. And I would go around all the different breweries, just getting to know everybody so we could always make sure we had the best product in our place. And I did know everybody very, very well. And nowadays, it's to the point where, you know, all of a sudden a brewery will be on my radar and I'll think to myself, oh, they must have just opened. I've never heard of them before. And then I'll find out they're 2 years old. And it blows my mind that something like that could fall under my radar so easily these days. But it's the truth.
With so many breweries in the area, I'm thinking that finding a head brewer for your brewery would have been either a really difficult or a really easy task. Either there was lots of people looking to move to new opportunities from those multitude of breweries, or that everybody was already employed and just had to take what you can get. How did it work for you?
It was a bit of a combination. There's a relatively famous brewer in San Diego named Jeff Bagby. And Jeff had worked for a Pizza Port brewery for a long time.
Pizza Port, yeah.
Yeah, he was their head brewer for a long time. And we knew he was not happy with Pizza Port. He left Pizza Port and was working on starting his own thing, but he hadn't finished putting all the money together quite yet. So he was actually the first person who agreed to come on to be our head brewer, but he always let us know it'd be temporary just until he got his own project going. We figured that'd be enough to at least get us out of the gate. Well, he ended up being much more successful and finishing raising his money than we were. So before we were open, he was already off doing his own thing. thankfully he had a good experience with us. So he referred a good friend of his, a gentleman by the name of Mike Rodriguez, who had worked at Boulevard and then was the first head brewer at the Loft Abbey. Mike had recently left the Abbey and he became our first head brewer. Mike then decided to do his own thing, but you know, he knew he'd have a longer transition period. So he actually brought in another friend of his who had actually replaced him at Lost Abbey to be the head brewer, and who ended up replacing him with us as well. And I think out of the eight brewers we've had in our history between the entire brew team, I believe six of them have Pizza Port or Lost Abbey ties, which, and they're the same company, just different brands within the whole thing. Yeah. So yeah, having guys like that and guys like Stone in town, there's constantly somebody coming up the ranks, learning a few new things, and then wanting to get out and put their own stamp on it.
Yeah, fair enough. So take us back to the first brews that you guys produced. Was there a lot of research involved in creating the original lineup of brews, or were you guys just brewing what you wanted to drink yourselves, or maybe you just totally left it in the hands of your head brewer?
Well, it was a little bit of a combination. We tried our best to have a plan. You know, we always knew that we needed to make sure the beer sold. And while we were focused primarily in terms of selling it over our own counters, we knew that we had a lot of taps. We had a lot of beers from other breweries. We needed to make sure our beer was good enough to stand up to a lot of those things that were being offered at our places. So we brewed beers for us, but then made a few tweaks here and there to make sure they stood up against some of the other fan favorites. And then, in 2016, 2017, not long after we got going, all of a sudden we started having hazy IPAs show up on the scene. And then we almost had to tear the whole thing down and reevaluate and change the direction we were going in. So as people's tastes changed, you know, for all those years that we were in the brewing industry, it was basically a race to come up with the hoppiest beer you could. And then all of a sudden everything took a sharp right turn into a totally different direction. And it took us a little while to adapt.
Yeah.
So we still say that we make beers that we're proud of and that we want to drink. But we also definitely are listening very intently and very loudly to the fans that we have out there.
In doing my research on you, I came across an article with this quote, and I'm not sure what period of time this was, but it sounds like maybe it was what you're just talking about then. It said, a very good friend told me last year that our beer wasn't generating the conversation that other breweries were. First up, I've got to say, that's pretty honest feedback there. And secondly, what did you do with that feedback?
Sure. It's a good friend of mine. I won't say what his name was, but he worked at Modern Times Brewery.
Oh, yeah.
And he worked in another brewery. Yeah, so he knew a thing or two about a thing or two. Thankfully, he was a good enough friend to give me that kind of honest feedback. And I think, if I recall correctly, I'd asked him why we didn't get invited to some of the festivals that Modern Times was putting on when, you know, I knew quite a few of the people at Modern Times, and I kind of thought, oh, gosh, you know, they're inviting all the cool kids, and we're clearly not on this list, so what are we doing wrong? And it really made me reflect a lot, and that's really when we changed this mentality of, okay, well, we can't just make beer for us. We'll be making fantastic Pilsners and bone-dry West Coast IPAs all day long, and we'll be out of business. So let's make enough beer for us to drink, but understand that we can't drink it all. So let's make some beer for some other people. So it was definitely humbling. I didn't like hearing it at first, but thankfully I'm old enough and have enough gray hair on my head that I knew what to do with the information after I finished licking my wounds.
Well, so some of the changes you made, was that how the Snail Works project came about?
Definitely. That's how the Snail Works project came about. And then up until that point, we hadn't really done any of the hazy IPAs. They were on our radar and we were really trying to resist it. I mean, it's not that we were necessarily trying to be purists as much as it just wasn't something that interested us all that much. But we definitely got to that point where we were saying, okay, well, it's adapt or die, because there's 160 breweries in town. And if people don't think our beer is exciting, then what are we doing? So, thankfully having some of the connections we've got, we started telling ourselves, okay, these are the types of beers we need to be making. We don't know how to make them. So let's set up some collaborations with some friends who do this stuff quite well and see what we can learn. And it's definitely helped take us to the next level. But Las Vegas is our second biggest market outside of San Diego. And none of that would have been possible if we weren't brewing beers like that.
I mentioned the Snail Works project. For those that don't know, what exactly is that for you guys?
Sure. Snail Works is our slow beer project.
I love it.
I believe it was a combination of Mike Rodriguez and then one of our other brewers, Jason De La Torre, who came up with the name, and we just thought it was genius.
That's cool.
I'm definitely a big fan of whiskey barrel-aged beers in particular, but with so many guys coming over from the Lost Abbey, and especially with their reputation for these barrel-aged beers they were releasing, we started realizing, well, shoot, why aren't we doing more with this? So we started getting quite a few beers going, and it's been a lot of fun. We've done a couple of sours. We've got a couple more sours getting ready to come out. But then the whiskey barrel-aged beers in particular, we're serving B.A. Baracus at the festival this Saturday.
Nice.
24 karat, Johnny Cashed. We have some more collaboration beers coming out that are absolutely dynamite.
Yeah. Speaking of collaborations, I saw you recently did one with Offshoot Brewing. And it's funny, I was only drinking an Offshoot Hop Trot Hazy IPA at a local bar here in Hobart just last week. An amazing beer. And I just was wondering, were those guys maybe friends of yours? How'd that collaboration come about?
Yeah, so that was actually the first hazy we ever did was called Haze Initiation. We've brewed it a couple of times now, but Patrick Rue from the brewery, who ended up starting Offshoot several years after starting the brewery, he and I got to be good friends. Again, back at the time, the industry was a whole lot smaller, so everybody knew each other. So we were talking at the Great American Beer Festival in 2018. And that's what I was saying. Hey, we know we need to do this. We know we need some help to do this. Would you and your experimental brewer, Andrew Bell, be interested in doing a collaboration with us? And, even though it's a collaboration in our brewery, frankly, you guys kind of taking the lead on it. And we still want to be part of the recipe process, but we want to learn. And Patrick's always been so gracious, and he's since sold a significant share of his interest within the brewery. He's actually got a winery started now. They were happy to help, and we learned quite a few things from them. Offshoot is a very, very fun operation, and Andrew is an incredibly talented brewer.
So a collaboration beer is something you're going to really be pursuing in the future?
Definitely. It's a lot of fun to hang out with your friends. So, and this is, while we definitely can't say that we know everybody in this industry anymore because it's just too big, it's nice to be able to have like-minded people within the brewery, having some fun, doing something a little more experimental. I think people are a little more forgiving when it's a collaboration brew, in terms of customers. They want to see what sort of crazy mad scientist stuff people have come up with and they put their heads together.
You know, you've got all these beers in the real pointy end of the market with the Snail Works program. You're covering off on the hazy. And don't take this the wrong way. I thought it was quite strange that you would have a Mexican lager as one of your beers. I wasn't sure how that would work, whether that was maybe your gateway beer for the unknowing drinkers, or maybe being the fact that you're sort of down south, maybe it's, close to the Mexican border, or maybe it's just all about trying to convert Bud Light lovers, perhaps.
Yeah, I'll be completely honest, it's a total mistake. It's one that just paid off. Yeah. So Jason De La Torre, who is our second brewer, he's since left us to start his own brewery called Ogo Pogo up in the San Gabriel Valley. He was begging me forever to let him brew a Mexican lager. And I kept telling him he was bonkers. I was like, that'll never sell. There's too much Corona Modelo in this town. What are we going to do with selling a beer that costs four times as much from a brewery that nobody's ever heard of? And finally, he just asked me so many times. It's like a child repeatedly asking the same question. I said, fine, if it'll get you to shut up about it, go ahead and make a batch. and it sold out so fast at our brewery. And he couldn't have been prouder. He came up to me and he's like, "Hey, the beer's gone. Do you want me to make more?" And I said, "What do you mean the beer's gone? It's only been about a week." So yeah, the beer's gone. I went and checked the numbers and it sold out every drop of that darn beer. And so then I realized, okay, well, first of all, I'm eating crow. He's proved me wrong. But second of all, we absolutely have to brew this beer again. And it's just sort of taken on a life of its own. We entered the Ensenada Beer Festival a couple of years ago. It's the second largest beer festival in Mexico. Ensenada is only about 100 miles south of San Diego. And they didn't allow American breweries to enter the festival up until that time. So we entered our beer and we took the gold medal in the Mexican lager category.
Oh, wow.
In Mexico. And that's when I was like, talk about a contentious medal ceremony. As a couple of white guys from California walk into this room in Mexico to pick up their gold medal for making their Mexican lager. So they don't allow American breweries to enter that category anymore. Yeah, we definitely knew we were onto something. So Jambi, our West Coast IPA, and Respeto, the Mexican lager, are definitely far and away our two best sellers.
So is the Mexican lager then your gateway beer, the one you offer up to people who aren't sure what they want?
Yeah, essentially that's what it's turned into. If you get a Budweiser, Miller, or Coors fan who, you know, they're not sure about craft beer and if they're going to like it or not, that's definitely the first one. Or frankly, even when it's, was it 100 degrees Fahrenheit outside, I apologize, I have no idea what that converts to Celsius.
30-something, yeah.
If you say so.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you don't want a big, heavy stout. So here's a nice, light, easy-drinking beer that's very crushable and very enjoyable.
Fair enough. And look, in Australia, craft lagers are starting to make a real resurgence. And I've got to say, I've been doing quite a few of them this summer down this way. So all power to you, I reckon, mate.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. It's been really good to see the resurgence on it. There's a handful that sell really, really well. I think most brewer friends of mine kind of wish there would be this lager renaissance. And I don't think that the general public is quite there yet, but we're happy that there's interest at all.
Yeah, I think the general public doesn't appreciate the extra love, attention, and effort that goes into making a lager. That's the issue.
Absolutely. I remember talking to Peter Zine, the owner of Alesmith, who's a good friend, and I ran into him at a grocery store and asked him what he was doing for the day. He said, "Oh, I'm on my way to judge a beer competition." I said, "Really? You know, what category are you judging?" He said, "Oh, it's the light lager category." And I didn't think about it before I said anything to him. I said, "Oh man, that's got to be a bummer. You know, somebody of your talent, your pedigree, everything else, and they're judging the light lager category. It sounds really boring." He said, "Actually, it's my favorite category to judge. There's absolutely nothing to hide behind,
yeah.
And you have to be a technically sound brewer to execute it well." He's like, I appreciate it more than any other style.
Absolutely. Oh, great stuff. Hey, let's talk a bit about the hospitality side of the business. I mean, from what I can understand, you've got the gastropub, the ale house, tasting room type of venues to help sell through all this beer that you're making at Mason's. But what kind of split in your venues or in terms of the taps are Mason's beers and guests, and how do you balance that?
Sure, it's definitely tricky. You have to try to keep your head level regarding taking care of your friends who help get you to where you're at and make sure you're supporting their breweries. But you know, you're also a businessman and you got to make a dollar. So you know, you need the most profitable way to sell beer that you make at your brewery is to sell it over your own bar. So we usually have about a 50-50 mix between our own beers and the guest taps. And we're constantly tweaking and adjusting the program. Part of it's seasonal, part of it is depending on events, part of it's depending on if we've got a collaboration with somebody. If we've got somebody coming in from out of town to do a collaboration with us, then usually we'll have them spend us 10 or 15 kegs, so we'll put those on tap and do a pint night or something while they're in town as well. So there's definitely thought put into it. We try to have a good mix. So there's something light, something dark, and something hoppy, something sour. So far, it's worked out pretty well.
Now, with all this brewery stuff, tasting room, blah, 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 all going on, you also at some stage decided to open up a distribution company. Are you a glutton for punishment? What was that all about?
Not only did we open up a distribution company, we opened it up in Mexico. All the movies you've seen are absolutely true. The place is crazy. And I mean that in a good way. So Yeah, we started a company called Cervezas de las Californias, and the whole idea was to take American craft beer down there and potentially do some stuff with some others. And there's certain aspects of it that works quite well, and there's other aspects that definitely worked against us. The biggest challenge in Mexico is there is no cold chain logistics.
Oh,
so if you bring, you want to keep your IPAs cold so they stay fresh and stay hoppy as long as possible. You bring them over the border into Mexico, and Tijuana is the closest hub for us. But there's no direct link between Tijuana and a lot of the other major cities by truck where you can ship it cold. And even fewer options by airplane. There's routes, but very few of them are refrigerated. So we did pretty well in Baja. We got quite a bit of beer down to Cabo San Lucas, which the beer was very, very well received down there. And then we even did a large tap takeover in Guadalajara that was a lot of fun. We were in a bar called Patan Ale House. We had all 30 taps of Mason Ale Works beers. And as I looked around the place, every poster, every sticker, every label up in the place was all from San Diego breweries. And here we were, 2,000 miles south of San Diego, and you just see the love and passion that the owner had for San Diego beer and how excited she was to have it down there. So it was good times.
I've only just realized that Baja is actually a Mexican state. I was doing some research this week that because we're coming to California this time next year and sort of planning my trip, and I was thinking, I want to go down to Baja, Cabo, San Lucas, all that sort of stuff, and didn't realize it wasn't in America still. So ignorant Australian here.
No, it's easy to have happen, especially you take a look at a map and the land doesn't stop. There's just sort of this imaginary line.
That's right. I was totally confused. And I'm a massive Van Halen fan, so I always wondered where actually Cabo Wabo was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Down there on the tip, Sammy Hagar's place.
Yeah.
Let me take you down. I will show you all around down in Cabo.
I tend to digress on these chats. I'm sorry, mate.
Quite all right. Quite, yeah, the Eagles had it with Hotel California as well.
Yep, beautiful. So, mate, with all these different facets to your business, what's the biggest challenge you've got trying to divide your time up between them?
Well, it's definitely tricky. I mean, the you don't want to end up in a position where you're a jack of all trades and a master of none. So it's a matter of having good partners, having open conversations, and trying to divide and conquer as properly as possible. It's and that's one of the reasons why I spend so much time on the brewery now is we got to a point a couple of years ago where Zach and I sat down and sort of said, all right, we can keep doing just okay at everything, or you can take over this and I'll take over this. And that's our path forward. And thankfully we've been very blessed that that most of that's worked out.
Oh, nice one. Nice. And what's the bit that you love the most about being so busy?
I don't get an opportunity to be bored.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. And probably trying to avoid early onset Alzheimer's by keeping your brain very active, it sounds like.
Very, very active. I'm constantly either uppers or downers. Lots of caffeine and energy drink or beer.
Nice. It sounds like you got a really awesome relationship with the people of San Diego. And as I said, I love that town. I was almost going to say to my wife one day, we should move here. I loved it so much, but we didn't quite make it happen. I was just wondering, how do you engage with the community in terms of maybe helping out and giving back and all that sort of stuff?
Certainly. We try to do what we can. There was a shooting at a synagogue not far from our places, about 6 months ago, and we did a fundraiser night to help out with some medical bills. We donate quite a bit of beer as well as gift cards from our restaurants to various charity events. And then there's a few other things that we really try to work out with. I throw a beer festival every year with a local Rotary Club that helps them raise quite a bit of money for their general fund for various charities as well. So we have to constantly remember where we came from, and that if it weren't for the community, we'd be nothing. So we give back when we can, as much as we can that makes sense.
Nice. It's good to hear, mate. And how do you take time out of this busy life that you've got?
So, I'm on this trip right now to Vegas, and then next week I go out to Arizona. What I try to do as often as I can is bring my wife and kids with me on every other trip. Gives them a chance to get out of San Diego a little bit. And, there's nothing wrong with town, but just sort of get out of everybody's daily routine and still spend time with each other. But I am definitely not good at taking time off in general. So, but thankfully I love what I do, so it doesn't really feel like work.
Well, that's the thing. That's what's the thing is you find something you love and do it every day. and it doesn't feel like work, I don't think. So, mate, you're very lucky. It's great to hear. So what about the future for Mason Ale Works? What's going on in the next 12 months?
So, well, what we would like to have happen in 12 months, and then sort of a fingers crossed and see if it works out.
Yep.
So we've got a couple of other projects, like our large facility in San Marcos, that we want to open up a couple more locations like that. Not necessarily all of them would have breweries, but some of them certainly will. And that'll really help us stretch our legs a little bit and open up some new markets and get a few things happening out there. So that's definitely the hope, is that we're trying to finalize a deal right now for one of those things to come to life in a town called Temecula, which is about 30 miles north of where we're at. And if that goes well, then we already have one lined up after that up in Boise, Idaho. But there's an awful lot that needs to happen between now and then for both those things to come to life.
Mate, well, look, it sounds like exciting times ahead for you, busy times. But as you say, when you're doing something you love, it doesn't seem like work. So, mate, I'm just writing myself a little note here to add potentially another trip to San Diego on our next trip into California, because I think I might like to come and try a few of your beers.
Come on down. Let's have a pint or three.
Sounds great, mate. Sounds great. Thanks so much for your time today. I know it must be pretty stinking hot out there in the desert in your car. So I appreciate you taking the time to tell my Aussie listeners all about Mason Ale Works. Cheers.
No worries. Absolutely. I'm happy to meet everybody. And certainly if you see our beer around, pick it up, give it a shot. Let me know what you think.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.